podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Football Fanalytics podcast in association with 23. This is the show that explores the ever-growing world of football analytics and takes on the many tactical and topical discussions within the game. It's episode 59 and we have a data season review for you this week. My name is Mark Carey and joining me is a 30-year-old Ryan Bailey. For the first time on the Football Fanalytics podcast, it's a 30-year-old Ryan Bailey. How are you, mate?
Have we not said it enough, Mark? Have we not quoted it enough? Yes, a 30-year-old Ryan Bailey speaking to a spring chicken about the game he used to love when he was a youngster. I'm all good there. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, thank you. Well, yeah, no, I am fine. I've got plenty to look forward to this weekend, Liverpool versus Real Madrid in the Champions League. But I'm still harbouring a little bit of disappointment because Liverpool failed to clinch the title on the final day.
Yeah.
And I say clinch the title, they never really had it in their grasp. There was never actually a moment across the whole day on the Sunday that Liverpool were ahead of Manchester City. But it still had a bit of drama, didn't it?
Oh, well, a bit of drama. I mean, it was... Where are you watching it for a start? Were you watching it at work?
I was watching it at work, yeah. We managed to have Soccer Saturday on. We had City on one screen, Liverpool on another screen. It was all popping off, yeah.
Well, I don't know what it was like at work because obviously I imagine that you had to sort of have one eye on what the outcome was going to be for, you know, for the stuff you were going to do for work. For me, sat on the sofa at home, it was the most wonderfully tense, dramatic, stressful, but in quite a good way, period I can remember in watching football. But the excitement was unbelievable. But there was a moment, you must have thought, being a Liverpool fan, when Villa went 2-0 up, there must have been part of you that just thought, this is going to happen, surely. But I think you were 1-1 at that point, weren't you, with Wolves?
Yeah, exactly. So obviously I backed Liverpool to go ahead at some point, but I kind of also backed Manchester City to score at least one goal, and then once they score one, the momentum changes. And by the time that Aston Villa scored their second, there was still a lot of time in the game. So if it would have been in maybe the 75th, 80th minute that Aston Villa scored the second, you'd have thought, you know, maybe there's a chance. But there was still fairly early on within the second half. So, I mean, it's the hope that kills you, isn't it? But congratulations to Manchester City. And what a Premier League season it was, actually. It's the first season, obviously, since the crowds have come back, obviously after COVID. And I think it was just, everyone was just happy to be, just have football normal again.
Yeah.
So I'm really pleased with that. And it was a great season.
I mean, also, obviously the title race was ridiculously tense and exciting. But at the bottom as well. I mean, did you at work have one eye on what was going on at the other end of the table as well?
Yes, we had some tablets going on. Like, we had so many screens that we had to put some on iPads.
Full
and
gallery.
Tablets. Yeah, to try and get it, you know, all coverage of it. But yeah, no, that was an exciting one. I kind of wanted Leeds to stay up myself. I think it's good for, you know, a big club like Leeds. I know that Burnley are the ones who have suffered, but I think it was maybe their time to go down. And I'm not too disappointed in seeing Norwich, Watford and Burnley be the ones to go down. So... I'd be excited to see what Leeds have in store next season, because obviously new manager in Jesse Marsh, he had a lot of ideas and a different style of play. So I think that now that they obviously have stayed up, I think it'd be interesting to see how they kick on next season as well. So plenty of drama, at both ends. I mean, Tottenham, I know that they were pretty much nailed on to get top four by the final day, but Tottenham being the ones to take the Champions League spot as well ahead of Arsenal.
100%. There was just stories top to bottom, wasn't there, in the middle everywhere. The funny thing for me was that Man United losing 1-0 to Crystal Palace and been the only team, as well as Norwich, not to score a goal on the final day, sort of just went under the radar, didn't it, because of how much stuff was going on everywhere else. But oh, good grief, that was tragic, wasn't it?
Well,
a tragic
Manchester
season all round.
Correct, exactly right. Yeah, just the perfect way to end it for Manchester United, just to sum up their season. But they have conceded exactly the same number of goals that they scored. They had a goal difference of 0.
I saw
and it's
this.
Absolutely ludicrous.
Has that happened many times before?
Maybe a handful of times, basically. I think 5 times or something. I don't know the exact numbers, but Yes, it has happened before, but probably not to a side like Manchester United.
And pretty unlikely, isn't it, at that? So, yeah, just not the kind of achievement they'd want at the end of the season, but an achievement nevertheless, you might say.
True, true. Plenty of talking points on the final day, and it concludes our season. And it's the first season, Ryan, that you and I have been a part of the Five Live Football Fantasy League, which... Where did we end up coming in the end? Because we started so well. I'm trying to think who would we have been the equivalent of in the Premier League. We started well, we tapered off a little bit, and then we ended up top half? Certainly top half.
I think we would be the Arsenal of the... So basically, for the listeners who haven't heard us mention it before, we were in the Fantasy 606 Head-to-Head League Division 2. And we've been sort of top four all season, had some big results, but towards the end we lost to Glenn Murray, which was a disappointing defeat at a crucial time. And we went from fourth in the last few games. We actually finished sixth, Mark. We did have a very good result on the last day against Jermaine Beckford, who we beat 89-53, but it didn't save our season, I'm afraid. So we are looking, if we're invited back, of course, another season in the Division 2. At one point, I thought we might do it, but there were, you know... it's a tough old game, isn't it, this fantasy football? I don't want to draw too much attention to it, Mark, but we obviously, twice now, have done a fantasy football preview episode at the start of the season. And quite frankly, with our individual performances this year, I'm not sure anyone's going to listen to the next one, because shall I tell you where we both came in the Football Fanalytics Pod League?
Go on. Yeah, please do. But can I just say before you do that I didn't change my team once at an individual one. I put all of my energy and effort into our Fanalytics team for this Fantasy 606.
What, so do you actually have the same team that you started on with day one?
Absolutely the same team.
Oh my word, I'd be quite interested to see what that was. So... in the Football Fanalytics Pod League, there are, it's pretty impressive actually, 198 players which we've had in the league this year, which is pretty good. I think next year we can break 200. Mark, where do you think you came out of 198 people? To say that you didn't touch your team all season, where would you say you came?
I'd say I'm bottom half. I would say...
You're definitely bottom half.
I would say, okay, 172.
172, okay. Well... give yourself a bit of credit. No, you didn't come 172. You came 153rd out of 198, which, you know, it could be worse. I'm guessing there are some people who haven't touched their teams at all, but must have picked a really bad day one team. So they're the people who are below you. I can't exactly gloat too much, though, because I didn't exactly do much better. I came 122 out of 198, which is pretty poor, isn't it? Because I actually do change the team every week. And, so not really sure what the excuse is for that absolutely horrendous score. I actually, in an attempt to salvage something out of the Fanalytics League season, I, towards the end, because we'd done quite well with our Fanalytics Pod separate team, I entered into the Fanalytics Pod League to see where we'd actually rank, and we were 51st in our own league with our joint team. So, you know, not horrendous, but shows you quite some level about how good some people's teams have been this year. And I imagine that we're just building up to the big moment here, because we're going to reveal the winner of the Football Fanalytics Pod League, the FFPL. So
yes, drum roll
please. I actually know that this person is on Twitter, so I'm sure we can actually reach them. And the person who won the Football Fanalytics Pod League is, with their team, Kroos Control, as in Tony Kroos, Owen O'Brien won it, Mark, who got whopping 2,682 points.
Wow.
Which, for context, because that's key, you got 1,926. So there's a good, a big old deficit in there. So yeah, congratulations to Owen O'Brien. For the second year in a row, I'm going to promise that we're going to send a Football Fanalytics Pod mug, but we still haven't got around to getting those made yet. So at some point we'll do a massive delivery and you will receive your trophy at some point, but for now you just get the congratulations, which should be worth an awful lot from the Football Fanalytics Podcast.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, congratulations, Owen. And yeah, that just shows just how committed some people are to it and how much better they are. Let's have it right. But it's good, as you say, that we nearly had 200 people in the league. So let's push for for 200 next season, and there's no doubt we'll do another preview. Whether that, you know, whether the listeners want to listen to us on it or not is another story, but no doubt we'll want to record another episode.
I mean, let's be honest, there are some things you can't actually account for. So I mean, we put Patrick Bamford in our team the first week of last year because thinking that, you know, the season he had before, etc., etc. I picked Bruno Fernandes in my team thinking, oh, the highest point scored ever the year before, and things just don't work out, do they? So we'll continue to live and learn, Mark, but for now we'll say goodbye to the fantasy football season.
True, and we'll almost say bye to the Premier League season. But first, Ryan, I think we should have, true to form for the Football Fanalytic podcast, a data season review. How's that sound to you?
Let's do it.
Right, Ryan, you don't know what's going to happen for this next bit.
Not a clue.
What has happened is that I have prepared some stats from the season. I'm going to go through each one in turn, and I've got the top 10 of each. And I'm going to ask you probably for your prediction before I disclose the answer. Some I might just give you the answer because it'll just make it too hard otherwise. But it is using data from the 23 toolbox. I don't know if I told you, Ryan, but for the last time this season, we are in association with 23. Now, I've gone through their toolbox, looked for some fun stats, some of them, you know, really easy ones. I've also just delved into FBref a little bit for some quirky ones as well. So together, I've got a few for you, Ryan. So without further ado, shall I get cracking on some stats for you to guess?
Please do, please do.
Okay, number one, goals per 90. Now, we know that Mohamed Salah and Son Heung-min shared the golden boot with 23 goals.
Salah did not look happy about that, did he, at all?
He did not, but he is ultimately the Golden Boot winner. He's the joint Golden Boot winner, but he's the Golden Boot winner.
There's two boots, there's 2 feet.
That's true, actually. That just really dovetails really nicely. I like that. Shared. So what I've done is filter for players who have played at least 900 minutes, as is often the case, so make it a little bit clearer. I'm actually including penalties in this goals per 90, just as a clue. But who do you think is top? Goals per 90, Ryan. No, I'm not trying to catch you out here. This isn't too outrageous.
So you say plus 900 minutes, yeah?
Yes. So 900 minutes played as a minimum. And it's someone who I bet you're about to say.
Harry Kane.
Oh, no, that is interesting. Harry Kane, yeah, was not even in the top 10, interestingly.
Oh, dear.
In terms of goals per 90. I'll go straight into it because we've got a lot to get through. We've got Mohamed Salah at the top.
Goals, oh, I need to not try and think left field here, do I?
Like, this is what I mean.
That's just an obvious answer, isn't it? Yeah, okay.
This is what I mean.
How many did he get?
0.7 goals per 90. Jamie Vardy just behind him, 0.69. He hasn't had as many minutes, obviously, this season because Vardy.
How many minutes has Jamie Vardy had?
1,954 minutes for Vardy, 2,974 minutes for Salah. So, obviously, we're talking about it on a per 90 basis.
Here's a question. Do you think this is finally the point we're going to see Jamie Vardy slow down now? Coming into next season, must be, 35 now? Something along those lines? Is this now going to be the point where the man has a rest?
I don't know the answer to that. What I would say is they definitely miss him when he's not in the team still.
Yeah.
So to be that kind of reliant on him, I'd say, you know, maybe there's still a good couple of years in him. I don't know. He seems to defy the odds a little bit every time
he
does come back. So you just think as long as he can stay injury-free. I mean, because he obviously played non-league for so long, or played at the lower levels of English football, his body isn't necessarily quite what you would typically think of someone who is maybe 35. So I don't know, but good luck to him if he does carry on. So yeah, he's second. Son Heung-min is 0.65 per 90, just behind Cristiano Ronaldo, 0.61. Riyad Mahrez, 0.6. Kevin De Bruyne, who's had a fantastic season, his highest goal-scoring season of his career, I think, 0.57 as well.
Nice.
And Jota, Sterling, Callum Wilson and Sadio Mane make up the rest of the top 10. So there you go, goals per 90 is done. Now, how different do you think this might be? XG per 90. Who do you think has got the best quality chances on a per 90 basis? Again, filtering for those who have played 900 minutes or more.
Ooh, okay. I don't know the answer, but I did see a stat earlier that Dwight McNeil had 52 shots with no no goals, which was quite a fun little fact earlier I saw on an article. Not that it's any relevance to the XG, but I don't know. If I say Harry Kane for everyone, do you think maybe I'll get one right?
No.
That's not my answer. Is it Salah again? Like, you know, from the Golden Boot winner, is it Salah?
It is Salah, yeah. And again, we're not talking non-penalty XG. We're just talking XG here. Salah, 0.65 XG, top of the pile. Diogo Jota, who has had a fantastic season. Probably, I'd say, a better first half to the season than maybe the second half.
Yeah.
Mainly because he didn't play quite as regularly in the second half. Is just behind him, second at 0.59 XG per 90. Even though he left Arsenal midway through the season, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is third. You know, again, we're talking players who have played 900 minutes or more, 0.53 XG per 90.
Wow.
Riyad Mahrez, 0.52. Eddie Nketiah, 0.51. So he's getting chances worthy of a goal every other game, Eddie Nketiah.
Yeah.
Obviously, only played just over 900 minutes, but still.
Towards the end of the season.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, did well in a couple of games and you know, scored a couple against Chelsea as well, didn't he, there? Cristiano Ronaldo, Raheem Sterling, Ivan Toney, 0.43 XG per 90, getting some good quality chances per game. Romelu Lukaku, I mean, the less said about Lukaku this season,
yeah,
the better. He's not had the best time, but when he has played, he's got some good chances, 0.42. And Dominic Calvert-Lewin, again, he gets into good areas, but it's just getting him on the pitch this season, which has been the shame. So flying through them, Ryan, we've got goals per 90, XG per 90. Now, I'm going to go to the team level here, and I think this is an interesting one within the 23 toolbox. And this is shot placement ratio. Now,
okay,
what this is the ratio between, and this is in open play only, the difference between a team's expected goals compared with their post-shot expected goals.
Ooh, that's good.
So almost how much value are they adding from the shots that they are actually taking. So obviously, as we've spoken about before, episode one, Ryan, it talked about expected goals and how that is the value of the shot before the shot was taken. And then we're looking at post-shot expected goals, then what is the value after the shot was taken. So how much value in that ratio is being added at the team level. Who do you think has basically finished their chances best? Now, this is a tricky one, so I don't expect you to get this.
This is a tricky one. I'm going to say Tottenham.
That is a good one. I mean, it would make sense with the way that Son's been finishing. They're not quite top, but they are third. So, working from the top five, let's go with. So Manchester City, that ratio again is 1.09. So
they're
fifth. Yeah, and I'm going to work up. So their XG was 81, and their post shot XG was 88.5. So
Ooh.
You can sort of see that it's, you know, above in terms of the quality that they're adding. Chelsea just above them, 1.13. Tottenham were 1.14. So we're talking tiny differences in the ratio.
Yeah.
Leicester City and Newcastle United are joint first.
Oh, I almost said Newcastle United.
Yeah, so they're just adding that extra bit of...
Well, because I imagine they didn't have many shots in the first half of the season as well, so...
Yeah, well, it's based on a smaller number, obviously. Their XG, Newcastle's XG is 40 compared with Manchester City's, which is 81, so there's obviously a difference.
Isn't that ridiculous when you put it like that? Yeah.
Exactly. So there's that caveat too, I suppose. But it shows that Newcastle were adding value to their shots. And so were Leicester. So
very
shot
nice.
Placement
like
ratio. Yeah, straight out of the toolbox, which I thought was a good one. Another fairly easy one for you. Obviously, analytics-based expected assists per 90. Who was the most creative? And I think this is including players who take set pieces as well. So we're not just looking at open play here. This is creativity in all facets.
The obvious answer would be Robertson or Alexander-Arnold. But is it an obvious answer?
Alexander-Arnold is second on the list.
Is it Kevin? Is it Kevin De Bruyne?
It's KDB.
Yeah.
Big KDB. Kevin De Bruyne, 0.31 expected assists per 90 ahead of Trent Alexander-Arnold. Gabriel Martinelli at Arsenal shows up favourably here.
Oh, really? That's good.
0.28 expected assists per 90, ahead of Reece James in fourth. Kostas Tsimikas. Now, he's just about made the threshold.
I was just about to say.
And obviously, he does take... he does take corners for Liverpool when he does play as well. So corners and free kicks. So all factors in. But Kostas Tsimikas, surprisingly, is fifth here ahead of Mason Mount, Dejan Kulusevski, who's had a brilliant time since he's come in. I think he's a fantastic player.
Do you think he'll come permanently?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure of the latest on that.
Been a revelation, hasn't he?
Absolute revelation. I mean, he's posting some great assist numbers already and obviously expected assists as well. So there you go. He's just ahead of Gabriel Jesus, Christian Eriksen, who is just a fantastic story of the whole season. Yeah. We all know that. And Michael Elise, who's a player that I really, really like at Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
He's creating chances worthy of an assist once every five games, 0.22 expected assists.
Fantastic.
On to the next one. This is just a bit of a fun one now. Normally, I've done it per 90 and tried to, you know, standardise it, doing what we should do as proper analytics people, Ryan.
I am one of those people.
Exactly. But now this is just a bit of fun. I want you to tell me who has had the most shots. And this is just the total tally. The most shots from headers.
Oh, I like that. Okay. I have absolutely no idea who that would be. I'm going to go Ivan Tony.
You would be. You're there or thereabouts every time. Yeah. This is great.
Story of my life there, Mark.
I mean, you're one away. So Ivan Tony has had 22 shots from headers. The same number as Harry Kane. Who has also had the same number as Diogo Jota. So Jota, Tony and Kane are...
Never think of Jota as good in the air, but he literally is popping up all the time, isn't he?
He's scored some great goals from headers this season. Yeah. He's really... Considering his size, as you say, he gets up so, so well and his timing is fantastic for someone who's not quite as, you know, as tall and strong as you might think. The player who has 23 shots from headers is Chris Wood.
Oh,
I bet the listeners might be screaming at you, Ryan, to get this from. Chris Wood, 23 shots. Behind Kane, Jota and Tony on 22, we've got Thomas Suchek, 20, Joel Matip, 18, Shane Duffy, right up there, obviously coming up for corners, 17, same numbers, Virgil van Dijk and Gabriel, Jay Rodriguez at Burnley, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo, Sadio Mane, all on 16. So,
how did I not say Chris Wood there?
There you go.
Right, I will get one of these. I will get one.
Okay, so who do you think at the team level now has conceded the most number of penalties?
Might not get this one.
Again, this isn't going to surprise you, probably.
Oh, now you said that, it makes it sound like I should get this.
Basically, who's the worst team in the Premier League?
Oh, is it Norwich?
It's Norwich City. Norwich City have conceded 13 penalties this
poor
season.
Poor Norwich, though.
Three more than Leicester in 10th and Wolves in 10th as well, which I thought was quite interesting. Who do you think has conceded the fewest penalties this season?
Is it Liverpool?
It is Liverpool. And I posted
because there's
this.
A few jibes, isn't there, that people give to fans about that?
Basically, yeah. I posted this on Twitter, actually, and then I realised, why did I do that? Now Twitter's just going to explode because it's just... it's either posts like very, very pro-Liverpool or against Liverpool. But Liverpool are the only side this season to not concede a single penalty, which I thought was interesting. I don't know how many times that's actually happened in seasons gone by, but Manchester City have conceded...
Not one penalty.
Just one. Liverpool have not conceded a single penalty all season, which
is because Van Dijk's just an absolute god when it comes to just shepherding people off the pitch, isn't he? He basically just like sidesteps like a crab, and then like a really graceful crab, and then doesn't need to put a tackle in, does he? So that's probably why.
I do think it is a really interesting point, to be honest. And I know that there's been controversy over certain dubious ones. Maybe even, you know, people can say about handballs and stuff. But I do think Liverpool have a really clear approach to when they. The opposition gets close to their area, they're just about to shoot. Sometimes, I think we spoke about this before, I think they do actually allow the player to shoot and not even try and get a little, you know, sometimes you get a deflection, it can go in off the player. I think they almost allow Alisson to have a clear sight on goal so that he can, you know, they back their goalkeeper to actually save the shot, providing there's a clear shot on goal. So Liverpool defenders do it really well. They don't dive in, and if anything, they'll block, providing they can actually make the solid block. But anything in between, they're really smart with their defending. They don't make rash decisions, which is obviously how penalties can occur. So that was a fun one, and not just so I could get some Liverpool propaganda in there, I promise.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of fun. So that one was, you know, that's freely available, but I used that one from FB Ref. And staying with FB Ref, one that we've used before, we've spoken about pressures. It was a really good episode that we did that time about a good press and a successful pressure. Now, using this data from FB Ref, a successful pressure is essentially the percentage of time that the team gained possession within 5 seconds of applying that pressure. So basically, who do you think has the most coordinated and coherent approach in their pressures?
Well, surely this has got to be one of the top two. Is it Liverpool?
Liverpool are second. Every time you're just missing out.
But
we're talking really small numbers here. So 32.3% of the time, Liverpool are successful in their pressures, which is exactly the same number, joint second, as Brighton and Hove Albion, which shows, I think, just how well they are. They do press with intensity and they press with success as well, Brighton. Graham Potter is obviously doing a brilliant job at
Brighton.
Is
that the first time they've finished top half, did I see somewhere, Brighton, in the Premier League?
That may well be the case, yeah. Is that right? I didn't see that.
I think
that,
so,
actually.
Which, what an unbelievable achievement, and what great, great team. I mean, expecting big things next season, would you say, Mark?
I'd say so. I also think it'd be interesting to see the future of Graham Potter. I mean, he's so well thought of that I don't know, I think it's an if and when another job becomes available. I think that,
yeah.
I don't know which team that would be, per se. I don't know who's currently maybe in that kind of bracket.
He strikes me as someone who would wait until it was the absolute perfect job, though, before, not that I know the man, obviously, but before, you know, not just taking any old big one that comes along, say if Everton came to call or whatever, the name been slightly bigger than Brighton or whatever. I feel like it'd have to be the right project before he moved. I'd like to think so anyway, but we'll see, yeah. I guess, won't we?
Yeah. Fair enough. Big fan of Potter then, are you, Ryan? After Harry, maybe your favourite of the Potter?
He's my second favourite Potter.
Second favourite Potter.
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to think of any more.
Fair enough. Well, while you think, the top was, as we mentioned, Manchester City, but 32.5%. So it's really small numbers. Manchester City get the title of the most successful pressures in terms of that percentage. The lowest, Norwich City. Again, all of the underlying numbers just point towards Norwich not being all that successful.
How close were Manchester United to the bottom of that list?
Manchester United were 28.8, so they were below mid-table.
Wow.
Which again is just indicative of the season that they've had. There's no real coordination. They don't know whether they're coming or going. Bruno Fernandes goes on one of his Bilbo Baggins runs and ventures, doesn't he?
He looks like a man who's playing hot potato in the last half of the season, doesn't he, with the ball. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, when you know, we've sort of had that conversation in the past, haven't we, about direct passing and sometimes high risk, high reward passing. And I remember Bruno Fernandes was one of those players who we cited when we talked about that. But it feels like the latter half of the season, there's just been an absolute panic in everything that the team and he's done. And it just feels like it's like a need to make something happen within the first 5 seconds of having this ball or something bad's going to happen. And it's just been horrendous, hasn't it? Like there's no fluidity or nothing to that team at all.
No, and they just can't get any, well, they couldn't get any momentum. And I think the harder they were trying and maybe Fernandes was trying to force it, the less things were coming off. So, yeah, just completely draw a line under this season and hopefully they'll have a better season under Erik ten Hag, which I'm sure we can maybe do an episode on because it'd be good to see how he sets up and how Manchester United do next season. Right, Ryan, minutes played. So again, at the player level now, who do you think... There's only two players who have played every single minute of Premier League football. Now, often there's a certain position...
Every single minute?
There's a certain position on the pitch which lends itself to playing more minutes. So that's your clue. That's everyone's clue. So who do you think has played... The two people who played every single minute of Premier League football this season?
I'm trying to think which substitute goalkeepers I can think of and who I've seen play. I mean, Kelleher only played in the Cups, didn't he? So is Alisson one of them?
Alisson is right up there. He's played 94.7% of the total minutes. So he's the 13th.
Hugo Lloris,
well done. He has played every single minute alongside a player whose team we have just spoken about.
Edison.
whose team
David De Gea.
whose team we have very recently spoken about, which is David De Gea. The other one, the other Manchester team. Yes, Hugo Lloris and David De Gea, the only two players who have played every single minute. Ilan Meslier at Leeds United, of course, has played 98.9% of the minutes. I don't know entirely when he didn't play.
Yeah.
You know, when did he come off? The only outfield player to... Well, sorry. There's no outfield player who has played every single minute, but the player who's played the most minutes for an outfield player is Matty Cash at Aston Villa,
which
I thought was interesting. Connor Cody just behind him. Then obviously quite a lot of goalkeepers. Teemu Pukki has played a lot for an outfield player. And yeah, a lot of goalkeepers there. Harry Kane right up there as well, which is interesting. So yeah, only two players to play every single minute, David De Gea and Hugo Lloris.
Nice.
Next one. Speaking of goalkeepers, Ryan, we're going to go on to sweeper keeper actions. Who do you think has made the most, this is per 90 actually, the most defensive actions outside their penalty area on a per 90 basis?
Well, that definitely won't be David De Gea because he glues his feet to the line. So
that is true.
So that won't be him. It's so weird, isn't it? You're always drawn to the top two, aren't you? But you can see why, because Alisson obviously just sprints out of his goal and claims anything, and because Liverpool play so high. So I am going to say Alisson, but I wish I had a more fun answer.
I mean, this episode, Ryan, is not about fun. It's about it's about facts. And we're going to go through every single fact. And you're
facts
not fun. That's what I'm about. And you're absolutely right, Ryan. 1.75 defensive actions outside of the penalty area per 90 minutes is Alisson Becker. Actually, there is a joint top spot here because that is exactly the same number as Nick Pope at Burnley, which kind of makes sense, but maybe not quite as high. Maybe not quite as high. Burnley, you know, typically do play such a deep line. So I'm interested to see exactly what was sort of going on there.
I never would have guessed that, you know. I might have said Jordan Pickford because Jordan Pickford sort of just like runs out like a madman occasionally, doesn't he? Just to meet anything he can. So I was going to go Pickford as the other one. But I
think
I never
he has more
sort of
memorable ones. I think it's mainly because Burnley obviously have to do so much defending that it's mainly sort of that probably. But obviously, yeah, we know so much with Liverpool playing their high line that Alisson is so attuned to the way that they defend. So that was interesting. Jose Sarr was third on the list. David Raya, of course, at Brentford. Aaron Ramsdale just below him as well. So, yeah, an interesting one for sweeper keeper actions.
Nice.
Now, we have entered the final one, Ryan.
Okay.
And I've sort of split it into three parts. So, we're going back to the toolbox and we're going for totals again. And I'm going to ask you, who do you think has committed a foul the most this season? Across the whole season. So, you know, players who play a lot of minutes obviously come into this.
Granit Xhaka.
That would make sense, actually. Do you know what? That would make sense.
But no.
He's not on the list. Do you know what? This is a hard one. I don't think
this is a very hard one. Is it a defensive midfielder, number one?
No, it's, and I don't know whether that sort of plays into it. It's a sort of midfielder.
Your position, yeah.
Well, here's the position, and this is your clue. This is the clue for everybody. Maybe that's why it's playing into it, because he's been moved into midfield, having played a more attacking role last season under another manager, and he's been a man reborn, having played slightly on the left of midfield for a rejuvenated, very, very rich team.
Joe Linton,
well done.
Foul Linton himself. What?
Foul Linton is a brilliant shout. Absolutely brilliant shout. So yeah,
no,
Joe Linton is a little bit too keen. I don't know whether that, you know, change of role has played into it, that he's maybe
he's just
not
buzzing
quite...
about how his career's been rejuvenated, so he's just kicking anything and everyone as a celebration.
Exactly. Yeah, and eventually one goal will go in if he kicks enough times. But yeah, he has committed a foul 65 times. Conor Gallagher 64 times, and he's another player who really sticks a foot in, and that's one of his strengths.
Yeah, got a bit of a bite.
Yeah, which is really good. Emmanuel Dennis on 58 times that he's committed a foul. Scott McTominay, Christian Norgaard, John McGinn, Sadio Mane, again, bit of a bite to him. Mikel Antonio, Oriol Romeu, very destructive midfielder. Ivan Toney, Juraj Kuchka, Raul Jimenez on 45 in the top 10. A lot of these, again, are players who are sort of more attacking players who just get it wrong. Yeah, so it sort of goes into that. So hand in hand with that, who do you think has had, and we'll fly through this, who do you think has had the most yellow cards?
The most yellow cards.
Now, you mentioned someone before, which we'll
come back to. Xhaka.
Xhaka is fourth on the list. Xhaka has received 10 yellow cards, which, considering it's a 38-game season and they won't probably play every game, you're talking like one in three-ish.
It's quite a lot still, isn't it?
Just quite a lot, yeah, exactly. Just
bet he's up there on the red card list as well. Antonio got a red card, didn't he? I remember that. I don't know about the yellow cards. That's just a hard one.
Yeah, no, that's a hard one. But if the listeners can have a guess as well, then pause it, have a think, and then press play now. It is. It is James Tarkowski, 11 yellow cards, alongside another joint winner, Tyrone Mings, of course, of Aston Villa. 11 yellow cards. Then we've got Yves Bissouma, Granit Xhaka, Jan Bednarek, Conor Gallagher, Josh Brownhill, actually, as well, and Bruno Fernandes, all on 10 yellow cards.
I mean, that'll just be for moaning half of those, to be fair.
Yeah, for dissent, which is frustrating for him and for his teammates. Now, final one. Tough one, actually. There's only two players who have received two red cards this season. Can you name either of them? And it is a hard one. It is a very hard one. I can even give you a clue.
I remember Dennis got sent. Is it Emmanuel Dennis?
It's not Emmanuel Dennis. For two. One of them is a striker who you wouldn't think of as a dirty player. I think twice it was for two yellow cards. I don't recall it being a straight red.
Timo Werner.
No, not quite. It was a striker who has gone through a rough time himself last season. Really serious injury. Come back to lead
Calvert-Lewin.
The line. Not Calvert-Lewin.
I'm just going to keep getting this wrong, aren't I?
It is. I was trying to just lead you all the way down. Raul Jimenez with two red cards.
Oh, I remember one of them, actually. Yeah, I remember the one. It was against Leeds, wasn't it, when we were watching it in the... me and you watching it in the pub, do you remember? And then he got sent off, and then Leeds did that epic comeback, and we sort of looked up like, oh, what happened there?
That's right. That was one of the early Marsh games. I think the other one, I could be wrong, was against Manchester City, I feel. But I might be wrong. So yeah, two red cards for him, and Ezri Konsa on two red cards as well.
Nice. Never would have got that in a million years.
No, I know. I mean, some of them were very hard, and it was just also an excuse to list them. But there endeth my quiz and my data season review, Ryan. Did you have a good time?
I had a brilliant time, Mark. Well done for putting that together. That was absolutely fantastic. I'm just trying to digest all that. I mean, we should do some predictions next year on who we think is going to be the top of some of those categories.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the season, see if we are anywhere close. That might be absolutely ridiculous for things like yellow cards and stuff. But that was very good. I enjoyed that.
That is a good point, actually. Do you know what we should do? And the listeners can let us know whether or not they'd like this, is we should do a Premier League predictions, just in general, who we think should be, you know, in the top four, or who we think is going to be in the top four, who's going to be relegated, who's going to be the champions as well. Maybe not go through who's
going to be. Why have we never done that before? We should definitely do that.
We should definitely do that. Let's put that in the pipeline. Let's get that on the list. But yeah, I thought it'd be a nice way to review the season, obviously doing what we do best, talking about data analytics. And of course, thank you to 23 for allowing us, as ever, to use their toolbox. So, nice bit of fun. So, domestic football is now over, but we have one game left, Ryan. I mentioned it at the very start of the show, and it is the UEFA Champions League final. I was gonna actually sing the Champions League song then, but I refrained from doing it.
That'll be a turn for the podcast.
I was going to scream the champions, but I don't have the vocal cords for it. Of course, Liverpool playing Real Madrid in Paris on Saturday. What's your predictions? What do you think is going to happen? What do you think we should be looking out for? Where are the key battles for you? Everything and the above. Go.
Well, I think Liverpool will win. I think it'll be a turgid 45 minutes. I think I think Madrid will be a bit insufferable, like they have been the whole Champions League run. I think Liverpool will go ahead. I think Real Madrid will do what they've done several times this season and make it scary and come back. But I do ultimately think that Liverpool will win. I do. I think maybe extra time.
Interesting. I wouldn't bet against it. I wouldn't.
I don't know why. I think extra time is going to happen. I don't think penalties. Although if Liverpool won their third cup on penalties this year, that'd be pretty impressive.
True. I mean, they haven't scored a single goal in the two finals that they've played so far. So,
which is not a good omen.
Not a good omen. But I've got to say, I do agree with everything you just said in the above. I think that both teams will score. I think that it won't be as open as people would like a final to be, because Real Madrid will probably let Liverpool have quite a bit of the ball, even though they can, you know, control things themselves. They've got a strong midfield. I think that the miss for Thiago is going to be massive.
Yeah.
Obviously, we suspect that he's definitely out for...
That's such a blow, that, isn't it?
Yeah, Achilles injury, I think that's a massive blow. I think another doubt is whether Fabinho will play as well. He hasn't played for the past couple of games. I think it's a hamstring injury, and he's so destructive in the midfield to be able to stop, you know, protect the back four and be able to get things going. So I think if both Fabinho and Thiago are out, you're talking about a midfield potentially of James Milner, Jordan Henderson and Naby Keita, which isn't as strong
the same, is it?
As
no.
Thiago, Fabinho and probably Jordan Henderson. So I think a lot will depend on the starting lineup and who's fit, but we shall see. I think there'll be a really good battle between Vinicius Junior and Trent Alexander-Arnold. I think Luis Diaz starts, and I think that they'll look to try and get him isolated with Dani Carvajal, if it is Carvajal who plays. So I think there's plenty of battles to look out for, but I do think that both teams will score. I'm going to go Liverpool 2-1.
Nice. I am going to go 1-1. And I'm changing my mind. I think it's going to go to penalties.
Wow. There you go. Who wins it on penalties? Or is it a lottery from there? Well, it is a lottery from there, but who wins for you?
Well, with our friends Neuro11 on the scene, then I think Liverpool will do it. So let's see, shall we?
True. Yeah. And for those who haven't already listened to our episode on Neuroball, with talking about all the work that Neuro11 do, then please do check that out. And of course, if you want to get in contact with us, if you want to give us your predictions, you can get in contact with us, which of course you know how to do it. It's at Fanalyticspod on Instagram and Twitter. Of course, you can email us, fanalytics.pod@gmail.com. I hope that everybody has enjoyed the season. One more game to go. Enjoy the rest of your week, everybody, and we'll no doubt see you next time.
Podcast Network.